Yeah, as my dad said, grew up in a pastor's home. They call pastor's kids PKs, right? Everyone used to call me a PK. And I kind of had an interesting childhood in the sense of I was a pastor's kid, and I had a great, I would say I had a great home life, and I had a great parents. But at the same time, I had a really good children's director growing up, too. His name is Brother Scott Kirshner, and he had a big influence on my life, even more than the typical 3 hours. I remember every Saturday I would be out on the road with him. I would be visiting bus kids for the bus ministry. He mentored me, brought me through a how to preach course at one point. He was a very hands-on mentor type of children's director, which is very much the reason why I wanted to be a children's director someday and work with children's ministry, because I saw how it impacted me. But I'll tell you right now, him being such an influence in my life and me wanting to be a children's director, I'll tell you right now that children's directors or youth pastors, I know Brother Rob would agree, don't have nearly as much of an influence as parents do. I'll attest to what he just said. And I'll tell you what, I haven't talked to Brother Scott in 6 years, but I talk to my dad every day, talk to my mom every day. And their influence is unbelievably greater in my life than any other person. And that's what he just talked about. It's huge that you understand that myself, Pastor Rob, my dad, nobody can replace you. You need to be that one who transforms your children, which is what this lesson's all about, transformational parenting. Transforms your children from a sinner, they don't know Christ, they're completely unsaved, to hopefully they'll have an understanding of Christ and what he did for them on the cross, and they'll become saved. And then finally, not just saved, you don't just want to see them have a, you know, get out of hell free card, you want to see them become a servant of Christ someday. And, you know, it cracks me up. I talk to people all the time and they say, wow, you're a PK, I can't believe you're still in church. Oh, much less I can't believe you like church. Or that you want to work at a church? What's wrong with you? You're a PK. And growing up, I was baffled by that. I just didn't get it. I was like, why wouldn't I? I mean, why wouldn't I love it more than anybody? I'm around it all the time, and I get to see it modeled, and it's exciting to me. Why wouldn't I like that? And I know some people have said, well, Pastor Dan and Mr. Neese just got lucky, because most PKs don't turn out good. I would disagree, though. I don't think luck had anything to do with it. I don't think it had anything to do with it. I didn't realize it at the time. But growing up, now that I look back at it, growing up, my parents had a definite plan in mind for seeing me transform over my lifetime into a servant of the Lord. They had a clear plan in mind, and when they gave birth to me, they had a specific outcome that they wanted to see in my life. They wanted to see me transform from a sinner to a saved child of God to a servant of the Lord. And everything they did as parents was done with that goal in mind. If you're going to be successful at anything in life, you're going to have to be able to visualize your goal. You're just going to have to be able to. And then you're going to have to choose your action steps in light of that goal. With anything, I'll show you a picture here of a blueprint. Before you ever get to the building of a house, or the building of any building, you start with the blueprint. You got to know what you're going to build before you ever start building anything. Or else it's not going to turn out very good. And then once you know what you want, then you work backwards to figure out what the action steps are going to be to get there. And it's the same way with anything else. It's the same way with building an airplane, a car, a Lego model, for goodness sakes. You got to have the instructions. You got to know what you want. You got to have the picture on the puzzle, or else you'll never get them together, right? And it's the same way with kids. It's the same way with kids. If you don't know what kind of child you want to see, what kind of man or woman you want your child to become someday, don't expect them to become anything. That is good, and it's positive. It's just like throwing a dart and hoping it hits a bullseye. If you don't have a bullseye that you're aiming for, you're not going to hit it. And looking back, I can see that my parents had a vision for my life to be transformed more and more into the image of Christ. And I'm thankful for that. And I want to share with you the things that were impacting to me. Three things that were incredibly impacting for me that helped transform my life. And I think that these things will be helpful to any child. And number one, I'm going to give you three parenting practices today, three parenting practices that I think are really important for any home. Number one, establish that God is number one. Establish that God is number one. On the screen, I have a verse from Revelation chapter 4. It says this, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power. For thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are, and they were created." That principle, the principle of that verse was driven into my head growing up. God is worthy of all glory, and he's worthy of all power, because he's created all things, and we were created for his pleasure. Everything we do needs to be in order to please God and to honor Him. That's the purpose of life. God is number one. He's on top. I'm going to show you a picture, and I'm sure you'll be familiar with this image. This is a picture of what? You know, they call that a chain of command for a business, or you can have it for the military. You have a chain of command. And ultimately, everybody answers to somebody else on top of them and somebody else on top of them until finally, there's somebody, whether you call it a manager or a CEO, whatever you want to call it, eventually there's somebody that everyone answers to. Somebody at the top of the tree. Somebody at the top of the chain. Let me ask you a question. If someone was to draw an imaginary chain of command for your life, who or what would be on top? Who or what holds precedence over everything else? It should be God. I was taught that. But I wasn't just told that verbally. It was modeled to me. And it has to be modeled. You can't just tell your kids that. It has to be modeled on a daily basis all the time. Let me share with you a few different areas that I think it's very important that kids see from their parents that God holds priority over. It doesn't matter what feels good. It doesn't matter what we might want. God holds priority over everything. Let me give you three main categories that I think kids need to know God holds priority over. Number one, entertainment. Entertainment. I put entertainment number one on the list. Here's why. Because we struggle with it a lot. I think we all struggle with this a whole lot. Why? Well, because it's so entertaining. It's so fun. Satan realizes the weakness that we have in this area. And he staged an all-out attack on biblical principles and moral absolutes. Through every media outlet he can, TV, movies, music, computers, video games, you name it, he'll use it all. And whether we realize it or not, Satan is the ruler of this world. He has a firm grasp on our entertainment industry. And you can rest assured, his purpose for entertainment is not to draw your child closer to the Lord. I can promise you that. That's not his purpose for it. Many parents drag their children to church. I see it. Every week as a children's ministry director, they drag their children to church on Sundays and Wednesdays, hoping that they'll get biblical values, biblical principles to bring home. And then they'll just fill the home with TV shows, movies, music that completely contradict those values. We tell our children sex outside of marriage is wrong, but we watch TV shows that exalt sex. And we teach that it's just a way to show you love somebody. We teach them curse words that they're not to say, but we allow those same words to be spoken over the TV every day. We tell them to exalt God's name, yet we allow His name to be thrown around the TV screen as if it means anything like my name or yours. I could go on and on, but let me make it very clear that Satan is very, very sure of his plan. His plan is this, to dull your child's conscience, from a holy reverence of God, and a disdain from sin. And his goal is to eliminate the colors black and white and make everything gray. That's the goal. That's what he wants. Growing up, I could not understand why my parents were so weird. I'm telling you. I'm like, why can't we watch this? All these different TV shows and all these movies? I can't understand why we have to be so different. It makes things awkward when people come over. And, you know, I just couldn't understand it. But, you know, and I had a rebellious streak. Let me tell you, I went through a rebellious stage from 8th to 10th grade. It was bad news. But looking back, I'm so thankful they were weird in this area. I really am. Because they were making a statement. If God's number one, He's number one over everything, including entertainment. Like it or not, guys, it's just the way it is in this home. Now, your child might not always like you for taking that stand, but they'll always respect you for it. Number one, entertainment. Number two, relationships. Growing up, my parents made it clear that the most important relationship in life was my relationship with God. Kids need to have that driven into their heads. They got to understand that no other relationship takes precedence. No other relationship. If a friend at school doesn't want to follow God, then that friend's going to have to go. Just the way it is. Period. You can hang around them, but you're not going to hang around them too much if they really are against God. And they don't want anything to do with Him. We're going to have to kind of separate that a little bit. Because that relationship isn't as important as your relationship with God. You don't live to please your friends. You live to please God. As I grew older, my parents emphasized to me that when I became old enough to choose a spouse, what was most important wasn't their physical looks or personality, but instead their love for the Lord. I was told that from as young as 5 or 6 years of age that they were telling me that. And when I began to lose focus in this area, they straightened me out real quick, let me tell you. And I'm thankful for it because I have a wonderful wife today sitting in the back. Listen, friendships are very important to kids, but they become even more important as they become teens. As they move into that teenage adolescent stage, friendships are huge. But they have to understand that God is their very best friend, and He's the one that has to be pleased above everybody else. It's got to be God. Number three, finances. My dad used to tell me, hey son, you know, we give, when you get old enough to have a job and give, you know, you don't have to just give 10%. You give more. Show the Lord you love Him. He said, I haven't been given 10% since I was in college. I think to myself, Dad, what, you work all week long at this church, and they give you a little bit of money for it, and then you give even more than 10% of that back? I'm like, what are you doing? I didn't understand that when I was a kid. But then he would keep reiterating to me, son, don't you understand that God doesn't own 10% of what we have? He owns all of it. He has it all. And then he would say, the more you have, the more you have to give. That was his favorite statement growing up. The more you have, the more you have to give. And man, he kept stressing that to me over and over again. And I think that's important for kids to understand. I think it's important for kids to understand that God rules your finances. Your finances don't rule you. Let me say that again. God rules your finances. Your finances don't rule you. And it's flip-flopped in a lot of homes. Finances completely control everything instead of God controlling the home completely, including finances. Before we move on to our second parenting practice, let me mention one more thing. If you really do want God to be number one in your kid's life, this is just a personal thing. It helped me. You're going to need to praise them when you see behavior that indicates that they're growing towards that goal. It amazes me. Kids, parents don't have any problem, you know, praising a kid for getting straight A's or for making the game-winning basket in the basketball game, but we have such a hard time praising them for doing their devotions. Kids from the earliest of ages need to be praised for doing anything that pertains to loving God or wanting to know Him more. When they're 3 years old and you can say, where did Jesus die on? The cross. Woo! You're right! Absolutely! Get excited! When they can memorize the books of the Old Testament and the New Testament, get praise all over them. When they invite their friend to church, make a big deal out of it. When they make a commitment to God, make sure they know you think it's the greatest decision they could ever make. Kids learn what's important to their parents by what their parents pay attention to. They learn what's important to their parents by what their parents pay attention to. I did. That's how I learned. So praise them when they do things that show that they're growing in their relationship with the Lord. So number one, establish that God's number one. Number two, and he kind of talked about this, be the same all the time. Be the same all the time. Look at the verse on the screen. And ye fathers, what's the next word? Provoke. Provoke not your children to wrath. Ephesians 6, 4, 8. Whew, man, in children's ministry, I get a front and center look at a lot of kids who have been provoked. I see a lot of provoked kids, and it's not pretty. They're angry. They're angry. They think they're angry at God, but really they're angry at the image they see of God in their family. But it becomes God in their mind. So many Christian children get turned off to God and they get turned off to church because their parents act one way at church and a different way at home. Hey, it's especially true, like my dad said, of PKs, for pastor's kids. For many a PK, the journey towards rebellion, it begins with a frustration at seeing their dad say one thing in the pulpit and a different way at home. I can honestly say, thankfully, that you never acted that way, Dad. And I can say that, in fact, we were, at our home, we were more conservative at home than you would actually preach from the pulpit. There might be certain things that we had, that you had personal convictions about, Dad, that you would never put upon the whole church to have to follow because it was just a personal thing. But there was never anything that he preached that he lived differently at home. I think that's huge. I think it's important that your kids see that you're the same person at church and the same person at home. Now listen, don't get me wrong. I am not saying that you're going to be perfect. All I'm saying is, be honest. When you mess up, say I messed up. I think that was the biggest thing that kept me from getting a negative attitude towards church. Was whenever my dad would lose his temper, and he just preached on anger on Sunday morning. And then he'd lose his temper on Monday. He'd come and tell me, I blew it. You know, I preached on anger in church yesterday, and I went and lost my temper with you. That was a bad reflection. Bad testimony. Will you forgive me? That's some of the sweetest words a kid can hear from their parents. Will you forgive me? How many times do kids hear that? Usually they say, will you forgive me? Whenever they mess up, they ask the parents that. But when parents ask them, will you forgive me? That speaks to them. Kids smell, they smell hypocrisy a mile away. A mile away. They'll notice it before you do. They'll notice it before you do. And whenever you realize that you've been living hypocritically, don't sweep it under the rug. Apologize for it. Just apologize for it. Just be open. Be real. Always remember, kids don't expect perfect parents. They just want honest parents. They don't expect perfect parents. They just want honest parents. Making mistakes won't ruin your children, but covering them up and trying to justify them very well might. Remember that. Be the same all the time. Number three, balance love and discipline. Balance love and discipline. And the rest of that verse I just read in point two is now in point number three. It says, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Kids need both. They need nurturing and they need admonition. They need the love and they need the correction. They need the discipline and they also need that coddling. They need that nurturing. They need both. And I see so many kids who are not thriving spiritually because their parents lean too much in either direction. Let me share with you what happens when a parent leans in either direction. Children who receive love and no discipline become spoiled brats. Children who receive discipline and no love become bitter rebels. That's what happens. Love, no discipline, spoiled brats. Discipline, no love, bitter rebels. Those are the two outcomes when you don't balance. Growing up, I never had a doubt that my parents loved me. It was just a normal daily part of life. And hugging me, kissing me, telling me they love me, spending quality time with me. Let me tell you, that's the starting point for a healthy child, parent-child relationship. It really needs to start with that love. If kids don't know that mom loves them, don't know that dad loves them, they're not going to respond well to discipline at all. They're not going to respond well at all. But while love is essential, it's important for a child to have emotional development, healthy emotional development. Love without discipline is also harmful. Very harmful. Discipline's huge. Without discipline, I'd be messed up. I'm still messed up, probably. But, I'd be even more messed up if I didn't have any discipline in my life. I was a stubborn kid. I was stubborn. I had a really, really strong will. And I think that the discipline that my parents gave me was probably the biggest thing I knew the love was there, and that's important, but the discipline was huge. And I'm going to share with you just a few things that I think were helpful when my parents disciplined me that might be helpful for you. But this is not going to be exhaustive. My dad's going to talk about discipline tomorrow morning. And then there's a whole packet in the back, which at the end of the day, we're going to take off that cover of that table. And there's a bunch of resources. Everybody's messages, their notes will be there. And then we're also going to have one at the very right called Biblical Parenting for the 21st Century. There's a lot of stuff on discipline in there. But let me share a few things. Number one, when you're disciplining your child, establish clear boundaries. Make it very clear. Establish clear boundaries. They have to have no doubts what the boundaries are. All right, that's pretty simple. But number two, discipline consistently when boundaries are broken. Discipline consistently when boundaries are broken. In other words, one day they disobey and don't clean the room and they get grounded or they get spanked. But then the next day when you're more tired and you just can't put up with it, you let it go. And there's this inconsistency. Some days, if they're mad and they're in a bad mood, they'll discipline. But if they're in a happy mood, they won't discipline me for disobeying. There's inconsistency there. That's not good. I can remember the story that mom used to always tell me when I was a little 2-year-old, and I was sitting in the crib, and I would reach for a cookie or something I wasn't supposed to be touching. I'd go to reach for it, and she'd slap me on the hand. I'd look at her like she just, took my life away. And I'd look at her, and then go reach for it again. I'd touch it. She'd slap my hand again. And I was testing her. Now, if she ever would have not slapped my hand, that would have told me, oh, every once in a while I can get away with it. Every once in a while I can get away with breaking boundaries. I can remember getting spanked multiple times for the same thing. Like within an hour, I must have got spanked 8 times because I did not, my will was not broken. I just, spank me, I'll do it again. And again, and again, and then finally my will was broken, and whoa, I don't like this anymore, I better stop breaking the boundaries. Be consistent, it's going to hurt you, I understand that, but it's so great, I'm so thankful for discipline. What a blessing it's been to me. I'm thankful for the spankings. I am. Be consistent, okay? Number three, explain the reason for discipline. Explain reason for discipline. You know, don't just come in and start swinging. Don't just come in and say, you're grounded. That's not a good idea. Make it very clear why they're grounded. Make it very clear why they're receiving a spanking. You know, and here's also another good idea. My dad used to always do this. I hated it. Go to your room. Me and mom are going to discuss this punishment. 30 minutes of discussion. Is it going to be 4 spots or 5? We have made a decision. It was like a Congress meeting. But let me tell you, it was a good thing for me. It was good because I knew they thought about it. And then they'd come in, sit on the bed. Let's explain why you're going to be getting 3 swats instead of 4. You know, and they would give me the whole layout. It was very clear, and they didn't just explain, you know, just the action. They got down to the root level of what caused the action, what root sin caused me to do what I did. For instance, if your child, you know, if they hit their brother or sister, and you go in for the punishment. Why are you getting this punishment?
Because I hit Susie.
No, you're hitting her. Yes, that was the action, but the problem is you lost your temper. You have a problem with your temper. That's the root thing. And that temper, you could get them to stop hitting, but it could surface in a whole bunch of other ways. You understand? A problem with a temper that's not controlled, you might be able to get them to stop swinging their hand, but the temper is still there. And they need to know that's the root issue. Your anger is the root issue, not necessarily the action. The room's not clean. Why are you getting punished?
Because my room's not clean.
That sounds very mistreated, right? I'm getting a spank because my room's not clean? No. You're getting spanked because you disobeyed. Disobedience is the issue. Rebellion is the issue. Get down to the root issue. And then, when you discipline, do it as best as you can. Controlled. Again, I already talked about that. Do it in a controlled manner. Don't lose your temper and just go off, because that's not a good thing. That doesn't ever go well with the kids. It happens every once in a while, but try to apologize for that when that happens. And then love all over them as soon as it's over. Every time I'd ever get a spanking session, I ended it with a hug and a kiss for my dad and my mom. I did. Every time it was done. We love you. This hurt us more than it hurt you, you know. No, but I really felt like they did. And I would hug them, and we would kiss. And here comes the next point. After discipline's been administered, don't revisit the sin. Don't revisit it. The case is closed. The book is shut. It's over. Don't ever talk about it again. There are many more discipline tips in the back, like I said, but that's just a few things that were a help for me. The bottom line is this. If you strive every day to balance a healthy dose of love and discipline in your child or your teenager's lives, you'll have the best chance to see true spiritual change happen. All right, so we've seen 3 parenting practices that I think are helpful. The only reason why I can say so is they help me. And I know that when I was just a young boy at the age of 7, by the age of 7, I already knew that God was the most important thing in the world. And I needed him as my Savior. That's why I got saved when I was 7. And once I trusted Christ as my Savior, I consistently saw what it meant to be a Christian. I never got confused between church Christianity and home Christianity. And that helped me, kept me from doubting the validity of Christianity when I became a teenager, which happens a lot. Happens a whole lot. Finally, the balance of love and discipline that I received throughout my whole childhood and adolescence helped shape me into the person I am today. I believe with all my heart that I have the passion for God that I have because I had parents that just did their job and they were serious about it and they prayed about it and they were serious about it. And their parental influence transformed my life. I hope you'll do the same. Let's bow your heads for prayer.